Began last week a study that I had been announcing for a few weeks that I would do, talking about matters of the home and the family. And I wish that everybody here could have been here for that lesson. It's a very foundation lesson, and it builds in such a way to bring us to this particular lesson. But the home is critically important. The home matters. And certainly of those things in this world that are important, it is a critical issue. As I made some quotes last week, as the family goes, so goes a nation. And when families are destroyed, a nation crumbles. And from a historical perspective, nations eventually will fall. And it is the devil that is hard at work trying to destroy families, trying to destroy the very things that God put into place from the beginning. The home, as we talk about husband and wife in this lesson and next week, is a critical thing. A home divided will not stand. A kingdom divided will not stand, as accusations are being made at Jesus by those who wouldn't accept the very clear evidences of the miracles that he was doing. They tried to say, well, he's casting out demons by the power of Beelzebub, by the power of the devil. And Jesus says, that won't stand, and you know that it won't. A house or a kingdom divided against itself will not stand. And if this was so, then the devil would be fighting against himself, and that won't work. And so as that statement is made, it is a fundamental thing that we need to be building together and not tearing down in our homes and in among God's people, the family of God as well. We made reference to last week, Genesis chapter 2 and verse 18, that it is not good for man to be alone. And that means, as we think about Adam, as he was first created, there was not a help suitable for him, and God made woman to be that counterpart to him. The thing that Adam needed was not something from the animal domain. And I'm not sure about the craze about animals and the love for the animals and the exaltation of animals. I love dogs, but they're just dogs. People are people. And out of all the creation, when God made man and then woman, he created them in his likeness and breathed in them not only the breath of life, but they became a living being made in the very image of God himself. And when God put man and woman together, it was by his design. And he said in 2:24, for this reason, a man shall leave his mother and father and cleave. That means to be glued to his wife, fastened. For those who have ever done any welding or been around welds, if you'll take two steel plates and you weld them together properly, the metal will tear before the weld will. They are glued solidly together. This word was used outside of the Bible to describe plywood, where there would be layers glued on top. It was glued together, and it's solid, and it will not give. Such is to be the bond and the binding nature of the marriage relationship. And Proverbs 2 and verse 17 talks about this relationship as a companion of one's youth. And other places that term is used in the Old Testament. Malachi chapter 2 and verse 15, God desires godly offspring to come from such unions. That's God's plan. They were dealing treacherously, it says in Malachi chapter 2, and God reproves them for that, says, I hate divorce, that a husband ought to love and to care for his wife as he should, and that out of this union should come young people that love God. When first things are first in our relationship to God, that's bound to have a bonding and a binding and a lasting impact upon their offspring. And that's certainly in the desire of God. I want to pull back the curtain here for just a moment in a couple of different ways. I've already mentioned his son last week, and for those that I've interacted with through the years personally, the fact is that in every marriage there are challenges and there are difficulties. As much as my wife and I love each other, there are still some days that are easier and smoother and sweeter than other days. Some days, you know, I'm tired and grouchy and it makes it hard for us. She's never that way, fortunately. But as we look at life, that is the nature. It is the challenge. But I want to suggest to you this next thing, and many of you may be familiar with this. It's something that I observed many years ago to a couple guys that had been stormed the beaches of Normandy together and had not seen each other for lots of years. And then they were rejoined. And you see an association and a kinship and some bonds and the ties that were there. And it's because of what these men had gone through together that created those bonds and those ties. And I suggest to you that's so in relationships, especially in marriage. When you get to a place that you've been married for 46 and a half years, like Deborah and I have, there have been plenty of challenges and ups and downs and sad days and happy days and heartaches and challenges that we needed to face together and growth that we need to do personally. But what that does in the course of time is it brings us together, as we talked about last week. We are tied together And I use the illustration of my boys being tied together with a rope running a 7.5 mile obstacle course last week. When you're tied and tethered together, you don't get far apart. And that's so with the marriage relationship. By the way, that is on the website. Tommy has put it on there. So that audio recording of last week's lesson is there. And I encourage you to listen to it if you haven't. What happens in a marriage is two imperfect people come together. Two imperfect people that should be growing. We are a work in progress, as we oftentimes like to use the phraseology. We're making repairs. There are challenges. And then there needs to be healing. And there needs to be growth. I'm doing some preparation. I spent yesterday, a lot of yesterday, preparing material on abortion. One of the things about that little baby in the womb, it has to be moving all the time, shifting for those bones and muscles and everything to form and to grow. All that movement in there is accomplishing something. As we think about the relationship that we have, there are things that happen, the coming and going, that give us opportunities to grow. I talked about the crucible of a marriage last week, how we are tested and we are tried. The question is, am I making progress? Are we making progress in this relationship? We find that, as I mentioned with this last chart in World War II, victory isn't easy, it's not cheap, and it's not without challenge. It is difficult. And sometimes we have to really press on. You know, this means that in every aspect of our life, that growth should be seen. There's a passage in 1 Timothy chapter 4, verse 15 and 16, that talks about Paul to Timothy as a young preacher. And as he admonishes him, he says that he needs to be absorbed, my translation says, in these things, so that your progress will be evident to all. And so that's certainly so with Timothy as a young man, and to myself as a preacher, to an eldership, to teachers, to all of us, but to Christians. And in our marriage relationship, when we really apply ourselves and we are absorbed in doing what we need to do in the situation, there will be progress that will be able to be seen. When I am engaged, that's the case. And Paul says here to Timothy, take pains with these things, be absorbed in them, so that your progress may be evident to all. Pay close attention to yourself and to your teaching. Persevere in these things, for as you do this, you will ensure both salvation both for yourself and for those that hear you. You see the perpetual nature of this growing process. And as we are absorbed and as we persevere, it will help us to be able to grow. And so that where we end up down the road is not where we began. And so my question would be, am I committed in my marriage, in my relationship as a Christian, to growing and to becoming what God would have me to be? Or am I just happy with the status quo and the world around me? If I'm happy with the world, I need to reevaluate, because the world will take me places that the Lord doesn't want me to be, and not for my good. And so I have to ask myself that question and reflect upon it. Am I committed to this kind of growth? As Will read for us a while ago in Ephesians chapter 5, verse 22 through 31, there are several observations that can be made here, and I could spend a long time here, but we'll spend a short time here. First, we find in the creation order, when God made man and woman, he did not make Eve inferior to her husband. She made him a counterpart. They are both of great value in the sight of God. And we can look at many passages to demonstrate this. We are partners, and this is a partnership. And there's no inferiority. As a matter of fact, sometimes what may happen in case like, maybe my wife has some various talents and more than I do in certain areas, which she does. And maybe some things I can probably do better than she can do. But when we put those together, that is good, and that works. And that's God's creation order. And it is a blessing when we can figure that out. And it's a critical blessing that sometimes marriages take a long time in getting sorted out. And in a marriage relationship, I need your help. It's not good for a man to be alone. So God created an answer suitable, or a help meet. He had a need, and God provided a partnership, a help in that relationship. Man needed his wife, and wife needed her husband. And as we are bound together, it is by a blessing to God. As we just read here in Ephesians chapter 5 at Will's reading, we find that husbands are under obligation to love their wives. And we could look at several things about that. One's in this text itself, as Christ loved the church and he gave himself up for her. That's the kind of love that the Lord challenges me to have. That's a high place to be. That is a high standard. It's not the standard of the world. It's not the standard of my neighbor. It's not even the standard maybe of other brethren. The standard is my Lord. and his love and his sacrifice and his help and his provision and his protection for his bride, the church. That's the love that Jesus demonstrated. And that's the love, that's the standard, which is a husband that I have a responsibility to strive to attain. Now, if you knew where I started, you know it was a long, windy, potholed, uphill journey. So don't tell me it can't be traveled. I'm standing here telling you today that it can. And if you had known me before I became a Christian, you wouldn't like me much, because I was all in for the world. But the gospel of Christ can change us, man or woman, from where we are to where we need to be. Our Lord sets this great example in John chapter 13, verses 12 through 17, when he washes the disciples' feet. And those that are regularly here have heard this point made before, because I think it's a critical point, that a man is to be the head of his home, that he is to be the Lord in his home, is how 1 Peter chapter 3 would express it, as Sarah called Abraham Lord. But what kind of a boss, what kind of responsibility do I have in my home as the head of my home? It's one like my Lord has, and that he demonstrated in John 13. He says, "You call me Lord, and that is so. I am a Lord, but I came as a servant." Men, fathers, husbands, that's the kind of Lord we are to be in our home. We are to lead our wives and our children where the Lord would have them to go. We are to come as servants. It's not so I'm boss so everything goes my way. I'm the head of my home so that my family can be taken care of and loved and provided for, just as Christ came to serve his people. That's the lordship that I have. But also where it started in verse 22 in Ephesians 5, that wives are to submit and respect their husbands, just as the church is to submit to Christ in all things. Back several years ago, we did a gospel meeting where I was at in Casey for all those years, and I had different fellows from the area come and do a lesson on home and family, and I gave Ken McDaniel a particular lesson, and he used an illustration. It was a quote. He said, "It's a pitiful farm where the hen crows and the rooster silent, where the woman wears the pants in the family." That's a pitiful thing in nature. And it's a pitiful thing among the family of God. It's a pitiful thing. That's not the design. That wives are to submit themselves to their husbands just like Christ expects his people to submit to him. Now, husbands, we are to love our wives. And when we love our wives like the Lord would have us to, it's going to make the job of her submission as easy as possible. And I've just, again, pulled the curtain back here. I know, ladies, that's hard, really, at times. And my wife is a type A personality. I'm a type A personality. And so we had to work that out. I didn't marry some milquetoast wimp. She is a strong person, and I'm thankful for her. But what she did is she made some choices to try to do what God would have her to do in this. And I'm thankful for that. But in this relationship, that's what God planned. And at the conclusion of this, we see that each partner has certain wants and needs, and we need to fulfill those according to the will of God. If my wife wants to live after the world and pursue the world, I can't support and help that. I want to help her draw near to God and be what she needs to be. Verse 33 concludes this, talking about husbands and wives. And as it does, it talks about that husbands are to love their wives, and that wives are to respect or to show fear to their husbands. They're to submit to their authority and show them the respect that is due them. That is the Lord's expression. And when Will read that while ago, he wasn't reading Will's chapter or Gail's book or some man's doctrine. He was reading the Word of God. And I'll just tell you, it works well when we work what God said. But we live in a world that's in rebellion against authority. The studies that I've been doing lately just sadden me so much in the rebellion of this country, and not just this country, against God and against righteousness. This is an expression that I came up with years ago because I think it's just really helpful. Oftentimes in a marriage relationship, what we want to do is we're going to be at odds with each other. We're in competition. Who's smartest? Who's going to lead? Who's going to call the shots? This is a competition going on. You're not going to tell me what to do. I'm not going to. That is not God's plan. God's plan, as we already made reference to in Genesis chapter 2, is he made a man and a woman to complement each other. Now, some years back, we were out in the hall here, and I asked this question. Some of the ladies were out there, and it says, which is the best, a man's brain or a woman's brain? And the answer to that is when they are joined together. And that's God's design, that we are meant to complement each other. My wife sees and knows and understands things that don't just dawn on me easily. And I do the same on the other side. And if we are competing with each other and doing our own thing, we're in competition against ourselves and against God. God designed this as a loving blessing where we work together and we strive to do the will of the Lord together and we complement each other. And what a joy that is. What a joy. Have you ever heard of anybody pushing buttons in a marriage relationship? That's something I hear all the time. It's a reality. And unfortunately, you know, we try not to push each other's buttons, but there are still certain things that we're more sensitive about. And so we have to be careful not to push those things. And the loving thing to do is not to push those buttons. But here's a button that you can push. Push this one. Forgiveness and pressing forward. In a marriage relationship, as we said last week, there has to be forgiveness. We have to be willing to forgive, or we'll never be able to go forward. And what we must do is press forward. In Philippians chapter 3, verses 12 through 16, Paul talks about his own life. And I forget those things that are in the past. Here I am, and I'm pressing forward. We used a map at the close of our lesson last week. X marks the spot. Here I am. From here I go forward. And in our relationship, okay, here's what's happened. Here's where we're at. Let's go forward. Let's push that button. There are two major issues I want to talk about this morning. One is patience or perseverance in doing what is right. We have to persevere, keep on doing. That's not always easy. For some, it's easier than for others. A couple of sayings here. The number one character quality of successful people is perseverance. A World War I pilot said, success flourishes only in perseverance, ceaseless, restless perseverance. And supposedly Einstein said, it's not that I'm smarter, it's just I stay with the problems longer. We have to pursue. As we think about the challenges in our marriage, we've just got to hang in there and hammer it out the way God would have it hammered out. Go the roads God has directed and would have us to go. And a silly little expression, but maybe it'll stick in our mind. We need to be like a postage stamp. We stick to it until we get where we're going. Doing what's right. You know, it takes a lot of work. I know that you're probably extremely impressed with how strong I am and how much I can lift. I'm still not recovered from shoulder surgery, so that's a pretty limited that way. But I you may not believe me, but on Thursday, I lifted 20,000 pounds. Are you impressed? I didn't do it all at once. I was just doing leg presses, 100 pounds at a time, 200 times. I got thinking while I was doing that, man, that's a lot of weight. But you know, that's the challenges that we have. Sometimes they're pretty big challenges that we have to face. But we just have to work at it a piece at a time to get where we need to be. We have to persevere. We need that so much. Sometimes what really happens, I've had some back problems this last year and had some injections, and I was doing leg weight, trying to press them. And I would start out doing 100 pounds and go to 120 and 140 and 60 and on. And the physical therapist said, probably rather than doing that, it'd probably be better just to decrease the weight and do more reps. And sometimes I wrote a note down here, with some problems, I need less weight. I need to not hit it head on, but I just need to persevere and keep working through the problem. And so, if I will, then I can get to where I need to be. The second major issue is the matter of selfishness. And as we think about selfishness, we'll have some more to say about that. Oftentimes, when we come into a marriage relationship, we're looking for the perfect mate. And oftentimes, maybe when we get married, we think, I got the perfect mate. But then a couple days later, you wake up and you say, who's that woman next to me? She doesn't have all that makeup on. I don't know who she is. She doesn't look like the same person. Her hair's going this way instead of this way. This thing, reality strikes. Often we're much more interested in having the perfect mate than being the perfect mate. And I want to suggest that I have the cart ahead of the course, ahead of the horse. That I need to make it my desire and my drive to be the mate my Lord would have me to be. Help encourage my wife to be what she needs to be, but that's not my primary focus. I'll help her and do what I can in serving in this way. But I need to try to move along with that and to grow and to work at this in such a way that progress becomes evident. That includes attitudes and actions. You know, oftentimes we know better than we do. Is there anybody in here besides me that often knows better? I see smiles all around. We know better than we do. But that doesn't excuse it. We need to try to do what's ours to do. And sometimes we let our emotions get in the way. Sometimes we let our pride and our ego get in the way. Sometimes we let other things get in the way. Maybe it's just the history, the baggage that we brought with us. But certainly, we need to do what we know God would have us to do. We bring baggage into a marriage, two imperfect people, as we've mentioned. A secret to marriages that have lasted 50 years and more. One is commitment. That's it. We are married. I've had some newspaper articles back years ago interviewing a whole bunch of people that had been married more than 50 years. At the core of that was we are committed to make this work. My dad told me of an interview on a radio he heard one time about a woman and her husband that were being interviewed that had been married more than 50 years. And as they were going along a little while, the person who was narrating this conversation said, well, did you ever consider divorce? And she said, oh, no, we never even bring that word up. We don't even talk about such foolishness. Now, murder, we considered a few times, but not divorce. We are in this, as God designed, for the long haul. And also in another series that I heard on the radio when I was driving back years ago. In this counselor that counseled all kinds of marriage situations and done a lot of statistical work with it. You might think sometimes, well, you know, our problems are different than their problems, or these problems are different than these problems, and the folks that made it and the folks that didn't make it is because their problems were different. So that's just not so. Statistically, it's not borne out at all. The difference is what they did in response to the problems and in dealing with the problems. That's the difference in how we respond to them. Here are some passages in Genesis chapter 4 and verse 7. We have to be determined to do what's right. And I think this has been just a most helpful passage to me through the years. I think it brings to focus some really important things. Now, I do like the way the New American Standard renders this, and I think it's an accurate rendering of this. This is when Cain and Abel are in the picture, and Cain is jealous of his brother because Abel's sacrifice was accepted and Cain's wasn't. And it says in verse 6, then the Lord said to Cain, why are you angry? And why has your countenance fallen? Why are you sad? If you do well, will not your countenance be lifted up? And if you do not do well, sin is crouching at the door, and its desire is for you, but you must master it. Sin wants to have its way. The flesh wants to have its way. The pride wants to have its way. Self-will wants to have its way. But you have to choose to master it. That is the direction and the counsel of God. And it's absolutely right. As we think about the challenges and the baggage and all, that we go forward doing what's right. In 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 7, it tells us that husbands are to dwell with their wives according to knowledge or understanding, treating them with respect or honor as the weaker vessel, understanding that you're joint heirs. And if you don't act this way, your prayers will be hindered. It matters to God how we behave in this. And I'll not go back to 1 Samuel 15, But that's where Samuel approaches Saul. Saul had been told to go destroy Agag and all of the Amalekites. And what happened is they brought back Agag and the best of the flock. And he tells us in there that disobedience to God is like witchcraft and divination. It's rebellion against God. And you will no longer be king, Saul, because you chose to listen to the people and your own will. You thought you knew better than God. How did that work out for him? Not well at all. How will it work out for me? Not well at all. When you look in Proverbs chapter 31, the worthy woman, starting in verse 10 to the end, you see that God is at the center of all this. That's the marriage relationship, and that chapter is so powerful about that. You know, sometimes these difficulties and challenges can be helped along a little bit. When I was going to India back years ago, the fellow that I went with, he said, "Here's the kind of suitcase I take." And it was a great big one, about the biggest one we could find. It was hard cased, but it didn't have wheels and handle on it. And you'd load those things down 50 pounds each, and you're trying to haul, drag those things around. And so when I first started going to Sierra Leone, I still had that suitcase. And so I come dragging this big, heavy suitcase in, and Sewell Hall and Phil Morgan and Rich Gant, all of them have these wheeled suitcases, and they're dragging along. Guess what I figured out? Next trip. Yeah. Sometimes we need a few wheels just to help carry the load. There are things that can help us along the way. We need each other. We need to understand there is hope and that we can overcome. The problems that we have are common to man, as 1 Corinthians 10:13 says. They're common problems. They're exceptional ones, no question. But they're probably not mine. And God is faithful. He cares, and he'll make the way. And this transformation that we talked about, certainly spiritually, in Romans chapter 12 and verse 2, be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Our thinking has to be changed and transformed. If it is not changing after the manner and the will and the pattern of God, then it's not the transformation that we need, and it'll take us not where we hope to go. As I said, selfishness is a great and a powerful thing. In James chapter 3 and verse 16, we just talked about this in our in-home study. Who among you is wise and understanding? Let him show by his good behavior his deeds in the gentleness of wisdom. But if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your heart, do not be arrogant and so lie against the truth. This wisdom is not that which comes down from above, but is earthly, natural or fleshly, demonic. For where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there is disorder and every evil thing. But the wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, reasonable, full of mercy, good fruits, unwavering, without hypocrisy. And the seed whose fruit is righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. Let me tell you, I love the place of peace my wife and I are at. Because there have been times where the water's been choppy, and it wasn't so peaceful. The people who love peace are the people that have seen war. I've mentioned to you before, there's almost an artificial peace in Sierra Leone, because of the magnitude of the civil war and the atrocities that happened, the horrible things that were done. People were sick of the sin and the brutality. And he said, it's just no good. And so in our homes, the Lord would like to be able to bless us. And I believe that his wisdom will bring us as we do what is right. There is fruit that comes from such righteousness. And there is peace that ultimately comes in due course from those things. But the other problem that I often talk about here, because it is such a problem, it is the American way. And that's this matter of selfishness, is it's all about me. As we just read in James chapter 3 and in verse 16, James chapter 3 and verse 16, selfishness. We'll be talking about 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and 24. It's not about me. And that's what we really started talking about in chapter 8, 9, and 10, surrendering my rights. This idea, all about me, is from the devil. It is from the earth. It is from the world. It is not from God. Look at our Lord and our Master as the perfect example to demonstrate that. You know, here at the end of July, I had COVID. And Deborah and I weren't able to be here. That Sunday, Nick Richard had planned to come, and he was here. And I got to listen to his lesson by Zoom. You know how much I love and appreciate Nick. But his lesson came from the book of Philippians. And the title of the lesson was, "It's Not About Me." And he used the book to powerfully, clearly demonstrate that. And, you know, as we think about this, you know, we sometimes people say, "Oh, we just need to love each other, just need to love." Well, what is love? It's not selfishness. It's not self-centeredness. It's not self-will. In the book of 1 Corinthians chapter 13 that we'll be studying before very long, we see that as that describes love. This describes these are all verbs, and they show the state of mind or the action that is associated with love. This is how love thinks, and this is how love behaves. That's a good way to say it. Love is patient. That's our first point, wasn't it? Perseverance. Patient with one another. Love is kind and is not jealous. Love does not brag and is not arrogant. There's that pride, that earthly wisdom we just talked about in James 3. It does not act inappropriately or unbecomingly. It does not seek its own. It's not about me. That's not love. If it's about me, it's an unloving mindset. Love is not about me. It doesn't seek its own. It's not easily provoked or is not provoked. It does not take into account a wrong suffered. The word here is like being an accountant. Hey, you did me wrong last year on May the 13th, and I've got it written down here. It may not be in a little book, but it's in my mind. You did this back there. If you want to live that way, you'll live the rest of your life in misery. And an unloving person, forgiveness is critical. Push that button. Verse 6, does not rejoice in unrighteousness. If my wife did something wrong, I would never rightfully in love use that against her. If I did that, I'm in a sad shape. But rather, love rejoices with the truth. It endures, it bears all things, believes all things, believes the best is what that refers to, hopes all things, and endures all things. Those spiritual gifts we'll be talking about in chapter 13, they're there for a bit, they're gone, but love never fails, is what verse 8 starts with. Well, I'm almost to the last chart. As we think about this chart about love, does that describe me? Is that me as a husband? Is that me as a wife? A friend of mine said, back some time ago, I wrote this down in my Bible, that's why I remember exactly what it was, that men want respective response and women want romantic security. And so a man wants to be shown honor and respect. He wants warm interaction. A man came to me some time back, was having problems with his wife, not anybody in here, nobody that's presently a part of this work. And as they were having problems, he said, I want my wife to treat me like she does the puppy dog, warmly. When the pup comes running up, the pup's wagging her tail, or wagging his tail, and she is warm. Oh, come here, Fuzzy, get up here. But that's not what was happening in their marriage. But I never heard it expressed quite that way. But I thought about it a lot and said, well, that's right. That her attitude needed to be warm and friendly towards her husband, not distant and cold and self-willed. And the same on the part of the husband. It works exactly both ways. Of this love and honor and care, one for the other, this warmth. Men want to be respected. By the way, what did we just read in Ephesians chapter 5? That very thing, that wives are to show respect, fear to their husband. That is a biblical truth. And responsiveness. Have you ever seen a situation where wife's just engaged in her own world and she's not listening to her husband? She's not showing him any due respect? And sometimes I think about, you know, if this woman's children treated her the way that she treats her husband, she wouldn't put up that for a minute. Disrespect and cold and unwarm. Not listening. I'm talking to you. Who wouldn't put up with that? But a woman wants, as well as the honor and all that we're just talking about here, she wants a level of security that she's protected and she's provided for and that she is loved. I think Ephesians 5 says something about that, doesn't it? Husbands, love your wives. That doesn't mean you have to be a Don Juan and you've got, you know, you dress just right and you do all the romantic things that would be written in the storybooks. He's talking about your warmth and kindness and care for her, that she knows that she is the most important woman in this world, more than mama, more than her friends or his friends, more than other relationships, more than any woman. This is my wife. And she wants to know in her heart of hearts that you, husband, value her. Again, painting with a broad brush, but these are two fundamentals that I think are right on across the board. They need to know they're loved, they're safe, and they're provided for. Again, the question, do these describe what I am doing? Again, you choose. You choose. I choose. What will we do in all of this? Well, next week we'll talk about some more things, about the husband-wife relationship, and then on the backside of that, we're going to talk about some of the challenges and the problems of raising children. Presently, in the next lesson, we'll be talking about skills in child raising and raising young people up. And so that's the plan at this point, by the grace of God. That's what we'll accomplish. Thank you for listening so kindly. And again, I would encourage, if you weren't able to hear the lesson last week, that you go back and listen to it. One of the things Cheryl said, it's not fair, you made me cry. She's been going with Tim through these challenges, health, and I was telling about Pablo and Nelda, that Pablo had been paralyzed for 20 years and a log truck had unloaded and crushed him. And she was caring for him in every way and trying to work hard. And my quote I had on there says, I want to learn to cook that much better for Pablo so he'll love me that much more. She was serving. May that be the spirit that prevails in me and in you. This morning, if you've not obeyed the gospel of Christ, the nature of this particular lesson has not been one towards how to become a child of God, but Jesus said, go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. He that believeth and is baptized will be saved. He that disbelieveth will be condemned. Mark chapter 16, verse 15 and 16. Once a person is baptized into Christ, Matthew 28, continuing to learn to know the things that the Lord has commanded, and do them, teaching them to observe. That means to do or to keep all that I've commanded you. And lo, I'm with you always, even to the end of the world. That's still in place. But you don't start as a disciple and get baptized, and that's the end. When you become a disciple, you say, I will follow Jesus wherever he leads. That's where I will follow. That's discipleship. Him first. This morning, if you've not responded to heaven's invitation, all things are ready. We'd be happy to assist you. Out of an obedient faith, a repentant heart, a confession that Jesus is the Son of God, to help you in being immersed in water in the likeness of Christ's death, burial, and resurrection, for the forgiveness of sins, to reconcile it to God, to start a new life as a disciple following Jesus until your earthly journey is done. If you're subject, won't you come forward as we stand and sing?